Welcome. This is Ingrid Kincaid. This is week one of the class, The Wisdom of the Ancestors, the Runes, and the Spirit Wheel. I change the name of it all the time because I don't know what to call it. And we're starting in the center. That's what we're going to work with this evening, is the center. And the way that I teach is very circular and cyclical, and so I speak around. I don't follow a linear path, and it's perfect to explore this circle, this wisdom of the runes and the wisdom of the ancestors in a concept that is a circle. This isn't information or material that's written anyplace else that I am aware of. I've been working with the runes for 25 years, or the runes have been working me. It wasn't something I sought, something that came to me kind of not by choice even, but kind of hit me over the head like, okay, the ancestors said, we've chosen you to do this. It's like, oh no, not me. It's been an interesting experience, life-changing experience, and this information about the wheel began to unfold in about 2010. I've taught it many times, and each time it gets richer and deeper and more extensive. What I will be asking everyone to do, not in class, but I'm going to give you the paper to take home. I find working with graph paper is really a good way to get a feeling of the balance and synergy of the runes, even to be drawing runes on graph paper if that's something you're interested in. But what we're going to start with is a circle, and you know, then again, you can do it however you want. I'm just giving you a suggestion, and you don't have to do it if you don't want. To draw a circle, and in the center of the circle, I've done two of these diamond-shaped, what do they call them? Rhombus? Anyway, diamond shapes with a giant X in the middle. Okay? Now, excuse me, this shape with the X is actually a rune. It's called Gar, G-A-R. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And it's very different than looking at a Native American medicine wheel, which most often the medicine wheel is explored from the periphery. And this is not the way this wheel works. This is from the center. We're going to start in the center, and we always return to the center. And instead of being divided in the customary, which it is in its own way, north, south, east, and west, the X of the Gar rune gives a very different way spatially to explore the concepts. And so how you work with it will be, again, how you choose, because you could conceivably, say, starting here at this upper left corner, determine that that's October 31st. You could say that that's the Samhain, time of Samhain, which is the cross quarter or the halfway point between autumn equinox and winter solstice. So you could look at the X's as doing that, as marking those crossings, halfway points between solstices and equinoxes. And then we have the quadrants. It's interesting because as you learn the runes, you'll also begin to understand that rune shapes are made up of each other. So within a shape, there's, like in this shape, this X is the rune called Gable, which is the rune of the gift. You don't have to remember all this. I'm going to repeat a lot of it, but just to set this setting for you. There's also then this diamond shape, which is a rune called Ingvaz, the rune of potential. It's a gestation, pregnant kind of rune. So on top of this beautiful gestation potentiality exists the gift. And then we can create the circle around it. And the reason that I create a circle around it is because no matter who you are, no matter where you are upon the earth, you orient yourself with the horizon. There's no other way to be. We cannot separate our presence in being in the moment from our physical body. Even if we imagine that we've separated out from our physical body, we still have the ability to do that because of our mind, and our mind is carried by the body. This is a teaching that we want to go back to over and over again within the indigenous oral culture, people of that are more closely connected to nature, that the spirituality is connected to the physical body. And we orient ourselves upon the earth by the horizon. And the horizon, if you go to some elevated place, is always a circle. And so interesting also is you can stand in the center. You can turn your own body. It's one way to experience it. And also as you stand there, the heavens and the sky moves also in a circle. And it is so important to remember that ancestrally, that the peoples of the land lived and spoke about what they were experiencing in the moment, in their physical body, with all of their senses. And it's so powerful that we still have not removed it even from our language. We still say that the sun rises and the sun sets, because that's what we experience. And if you separate yourself out from all the esoteric jargon and science and all, you know, higher education, and don't get caught in that, come back to your body and say, in this moment, in this physical form, what do I see? What do I hear? What do I smell? What do I taste? What do I feel? And what happens for us is when we stand in the center of our own life, what we experience is we watch the sun coming up out of the earth or out of the water, and we watch the moon come up out of the earth or out of the water, and when we turn our bodies and we face in another direction, we observe that that's what they go back. And every time we get caught in this thinking thing, you know, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that. This is not the focus of this 5 weeks together. This is an opportunity to reconsider how you experience life. And to get up in the morning, for instance, take an intention of getting up in the morning and going someplace so that you can actually watch the sun come up out of the earth. And speak about it that way. And ask yourself, in this present moment, standing here, what is happening for me? What am I observing? What am I feeling? Because the air changes, the smells change, the sounds change. It's a very magical, amazing experience. And when you turn and face the other direction, opposite yourself, turn halfway around, and you observe that it goes back into the earth, goes back into the water. And interestingly, this is also what we know about life. If we stop the scientific and the medical and all the explanations, what happens? Life emerges from the body of the woman, comes out. It's pretty amazing. If you've ever either had a child or experienced a child being born, this new being comes out of the body. It literally emerges. And when we die, what do? We go back into the earth. So also what happens is then we go back to the place where the sun comes from. And we go back to the place where the moon comes from. And if you were only experiencing that circular moment, then you could imagine that they disappeared sometime. You know, the sun disappears during the night, underground. move slowly, moves more. Sometimes it moves very slowly, so much so farther north you go that she doesn't come out for months. And that's what happens also when we die. We are birthed from the place of the emerging, and then we return to the place where the sun goes and where the moon goes. It's a very different way to be, isn't it? We'll talk a lot more about this. So, for the center, we're also going to connect with the imagery of the world tree. But I really, there's a couple things that I want you to do. Everybody can have a paper if they would like, or I think there's enough for two, and if not, I'll get more. I would like all of you to find some kind of staff, something that speaks to you. You can buy it. I'll pass this around. This was gifted to me. It's a birch staff with lots of runes carved on it. I have a wonderful staff that I call my Odin staff. Odin and I don't have the best relationship in the world, but here he is smiling with one eye. Doesn't that look like Odin with one eye? Now, I found this staff at New Renaissance, and it's sassafras. I don't know much about sassafras, but there it is. And then this was gifted to me by a woman in Vancouver, and it's a hazel. And it actually grew this way. This is the bulb of the root. But it's like, is this not the most amazing thing? I call it a turtle snake. It looks like a turtle on top of a twisted snake. I want you, you may not find one in the 5 weeks. Don't force yourself, you know. Don't get things that don't feel right. But ask for staff to come to you. Look for them. Many times they'll appear, or they'll be given to you, or you'll be someplace, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's my staff. How many of you have a staff?
Sort of, kind of.
No, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence.
Well, I found what could be a staff,
okay.
But I haven't
worked with it. Okay, then that's a good place to start. In the Old Norse tradition, we were called Volva Stav. We were staff carrying. The Volva was the wise woman, the seeress, and she Stav was her staff. She carried a staff. She wandered around. She was the wisdom keeper. We can't use that word today because everybody thinks you're saying Volva, and then they don't know what to do with it. Like, oh my! So, the reason I say to get yourself a staff. It's because working with this concept of the garun in the center of the wheel, the teaching is always go back into your center. No matter what's happening, no matter where you are, whether you physically can do it or whether you can energetically or mentally do it, you find you're confused, you're overridden, you're being abused, you don't know what decision to make, you don't know which way you're going, you're frustrated. Anybody relate to these kinds of words? Mm-hmm. You physically, you know, you can get up out of your desk at work, go to the bathroom, and do the, you know, step into the center. I'm stepping into the center of my life. Imagine your staff with you. Or if you can't leave, have some kind of a word that you can use, even if you just say center, mm-hmm. Center. And energetically step into the center. Learning to practice with a staff at home gives this determined sense of self. There's great power that happens when we work with these beings of wood. And it also creates then this beautiful triangle. You think about now you've got your 2 feet on the ground, you've got your staff. And there's the number 3 in Norse, in the old Norse teachings or the Northern European teachings. 3 is just very, very prevalent. And then the 3 times 3 with creating the 9. You'll see so many 3s and 9s. What happens then is that you can copy the roots of the world tree. You can copy the energy of the triple being that's called Nornir, who dwells in the roots of the world tree. You can this is an easy way to connect with these things. So you step into the center. stand up. I'm a performer. And what you say is, I am the center of the universe. We're not supposed to do that, right? No. That goes against every Christianity, even some of the New Age community. Mm-hmm. I am the center of the universe. Because in truth, at this moment, everything moves away out from me, up above, down below, all around. And if you step up and stand in the center of your universe, you can't take it away from me. Because you're not standing in my body. You become the center as well, and you do, and you do. So it's not about taking anything away from anybody. It's about recognizing who you are. I am the center. And out from me, everything expands, including the horizon. You know, because that's, again, when you stand on the top of the hill and you look around and you turn your body all the way around, what do you see? You see a circle. And how you position yourself within the circle is in relationship to time. But time not as a concept, a mental concept, but time as the experience of what you're actually seeing. Because if you stand there, you say, oh, the sun is disappearing. You see, because the time then becomes in relationship with the space, present moment, when you stay in the center. And if you stay in the center and you observe long enough, you will notice on the horizon that each day the place where the sun rises and sets is going to be slightly different. You'll notice that there's a pattern. And it'll move a little bit to the right, and then it moves a little bit to the left. And so that's also why I'm saying that in the present moment, as you orient yourself in the center, you begin to observe that you cannot separate the present from the experience of time. Because how you know where you are is in relationship to what's happening around you. It's a different way of being. So always, this is even if you just experience the center of this teaching, always come back to the center of your own life, of the present moment, of your body, of all the senses, all the experiences, and you can have a series of questions even to ask, what am I feeling right now? What's going on? Which way is the wind blowing? What temperature is it? How light is it? How dark is it? Because in truth, all this other abstracted stuff that goes on in our mind doesn't give us a way to connect with our bodies, and it's through our bodies that we experience life. We don't experience any other way. Because even if you think you're doing it with your mind, you still relate it to your body. And it's all the senses at one time. They're not separate. We don't separate out. Sight and sound give us an ability to have an experience at a distance away from our body. We still have to use those senses. Perhaps smell a little bit, but maybe not quite as much. Sometimes taste, because sometimes you can taste something as you smell it. But the thing that happens that has to be here is touch. You have to be able to have the ability to touch. And that's one of the senses that is not any less important than all the others. But we forget all of these. So come back and say, what am I feeling? You know, where am I? What's going on? Always the center. Always the center. So what is interesting in our language, and I speak a lot about language because language is the way that we, how we think. And language is made up of words, and words also direct and manipulate our thought process, even when we're not aware of it. We use words that have been, that we repeat words often without giving any thought to where they come from and what they mean. So I'm going to take, for instance, the word orient. So how do you orient yourself in the circle? Now that's a common word. But the word orient is a Latin word, and its origin is basic, simple. It means rising up. And people naturally orient themselves on the earth with the rising up of the sun. That's just how we do it, because that's where we're on earth. That's our experience. It came to mean, though, based on who was speaking Latin and who was doing the writing, it came to mean any other people that lived in the direction. They were the center. They were the center at that time. And anything that was in the direction of where the sun comes up was the orient. So we had to go. It's fascinating when you think about it. So we oriented ourselves by facing the sun, but if we wanted to go to the orient, we would walk in the direction of where the sun was rising. So technically, even though now we can't say orient, that's inappropriate, we have to say Asian.
Right? The name of my doctorate degree, or like what I'm going to get, is...
It's Oriental.
Doctor of Science of Oriental Medicine.
Yes, yes. So it's very applicable to also what you're learning, because we don't think about these words in our language and by separating them out and seeing, well, where do they come from, what do they actually mean? So we orient ourselves by facing the rising sun. The orient was anything that was in the direction. So technically, if we live here in Portland, the orient could be New York, right? But we don't think of it that way, because we now think that it's something other. And that's because the people who used that word and began to weave it into common language were the Greeks and the Romans. And orient meant that direction. It also is interesting because it used to be that the maps were oriented so that the east... was at the top. East was at the top. Before they started doing the north at the top. And then there's a whole other exploration of that.
Because the sun rises in the east?
The sun rises in the east. And they literally oriented themselves with regard to how the sun was rising. Where the sun was rising. And then there's a note that I made here that... our word north comes from kind of convoluted back through Indo-European. The word ner, N-E-R, which is present in some of the kind of words like down below, nader, the words that are similar in that. But the word ner meant down under. That's where north came from. But so you imagine, this is east. The sun comes up right there. In the northern hemisphere, which is where our ancestors are from, they face the rising sun. And the sun always arcs this way. It arcs this way. That's why we go in that direction. We call that clockwise, because clocks are based upon the sundial. Sun goes this way in the northern hemisphere. And as we do that, the north is the down under, because we're doing this. We're experiencing these things in our bodies. The language spoke to what was actually being experienced by the people. Which then takes us to, and this is important for us when we stand in our center, because if this teaching is truly timeless wisdom, if this teaching can be used across cultures and across time, it is focused on the northern peoples, but there has to be a wisdom that's inherent in the teaching. So if we stand in the northern hemisphere and look at the rising sun, we then have a way, you know, when we turn this way and we're facing the setting sun, and we turn this way and we're facing the rising sun, and we can turn this way, it doesn't matter. But you're using your body in the center. And if we get rid of the right and left, there's also kind of craziness around the word right, because it's the word we use for correct. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is the correct way to do something, which is the right way.
And left was sinister.
Yes, and left is sinister, so that's like, oh, we don't want to do that. But we have this whole language of clockwise and counterclockwise, and that's very present in the Wiccan community of, you know, Diocil and Widdershins. Okay. Diocil actually means the direction of the sun. But that's only true in the northern hemisphere, not in the southern hemisphere. And it isn't about right or wrong, it's about the experience of what you're actually observing. Because in the northern hemisphere, if you face the sun, it does this. And so let's get rid of right and wrong and say this is the side of my body where my liver is. That's my liver side. Most everybody has their liver on their right side, and let's say this is my heart side. If I face the sun, I'm standing in the center of my life, I'm facing the sun, and on this side, my heart side, if I were to turn and face this direction, where would I be going? You know, if I'm, this is east, mm-hmm. I'd be going north. Mm-hmm. It's colder up there. I'm going toward the Arctic Circle, going where the days are long in the summer and the nights are long in the winter, and I don't have any right or wrong with it. I'm just going in that direction. This is in the direction of my heart arm, because I'm orienting myself with the sun. I'm turning now in the direction of my heart arm, and I'm moving in that direction. I'm going north, and it's going to get colder and darker. If you're in the southern hemisphere, that's not true. Because if you face the rising sun and you go in the direction of your heart arm, you're actually going to end up at the equator long before you get to the Arctic Circle. And in the southern hemisphere, when you face the rising sun, it goes this way across the sky. So it is not counterclockwise. The clock was based upon the sundial. Sundial works differently in the southern hemisphere. And so Widdershins doesn't mean anything, neither does Diocil, because the sun arcs across the sky to your left, and it's absolutely perfect, and there's nothing sinister or evil or negative or dark about the way the sun goes in the southern hemisphere. So you could take this down there, and you can always stand and say, if I look at the horizon and I face the direction of the sun and I watch how the sun arcs across the sky, that will mean that my body will be turning to the left. And it doesn't mean anything more than that. So why I'm bringing this into play is that I also want you to explore through this teaching, and we will get to the rune that applies to this, through this teaching, the fact that there is no right or wrong, there is no up or down, there is no light or dark or good and bad in the concept of standing in the center of your own life, because all of these experiences have to happen as part of your existence on the earth. Now, there are things, you know, I'm not talking about good and evil. We're not doing that. I'm talking about how we have in our language, we have in our spiritual practices, this concept somehow that what's above is better than what's below. We're taught that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. We're always encouraged to raise our vibrations, strive for the light, get to the higher consciousness, Nobody, you know, it's like, no, I'm here to endarken you. I'm here to bring your vibration really low down so that you're resonating with the earth. Whew. You know, it's like, oh, no, we don't do that. Anybody familiar with this kind of... But what it is this pseudo-spirituality that encourages you to make decisions about things that are out of balance. Because if we are only focused on the above, and we're only focused on doing it the right way, and we're only focused on the light and the high vibration, we are out of balance. And when we are out of balance, our life doesn't work. And whenever we think of these low vibrations and the darkness as being something that is bad or less than or evil, we are out of balance. Because that is not true. Because where does the sun go? Into the dark. And the dark is not a place that needs to be enlightened. The dark exists all by itself. It is separate. It has its own intelligence. It has its own being. We do not need to shine light into the dark any more than we need to shine dark into the light, because they exist in this beautiful balance, just like above and below exists, but not this thing about there's a top to the earth and a bottom to the earth, which is how we are taught to perceive it. And we're taught to perceive it manipulated and actually directed because of the way the maps are drawn. Because there is no top to the earth. It hangs in space. So whose perspective gives it top and bottom? The conquerors, right? Whoever drew the map. Whoever thinks they're in control determine that we're going to put this up at the top and we're going to put this down at the bottom, because in fact there is no. Just hold that. It's like there is no top and bottom to the earth. And there is no significance in the poles being reversed. You know, we get this horror, this awfulizing that goes on sometimes in the communities, like, oh. But it's like it's all there, whole and complete. And happening, and the way that we experience it is in the moment where we are standing. What's going on? How are you having this experience? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? What's going on for you? So in my notes, I bring up a very interesting piece of information. We'll get to it. In 2014, the new president of Bolivia decided to change the clock faces in Bolivia to make them reflect the way the sun moves south of the equator. Mm-hmm. And so this was like on the town hall. They actually had the clock going the direction opposite of the way it goes in the northern hemisphere, because he said, why should we have our clocks going in a way that is not in harmony with what we experience in this part of the world? And the reason they go the way they do is, once again, because the clocks were brought to them by the conquerors from the northern hemisphere, just like the maps were made. And it's interesting for us, like, oh, the clock is going the wrong way. No. It's like saying that I lived in England for several years. They don't drive on the wrong side of the street. Mm-hmm. They just drive on a different side of the street. That's all. Not wrong. Different. So this kind of like messes with you, you know, if you think, oh no, that's completely opposite of how I experience things. And go back and stand in the center and ask yourself, if I was standing in the center of my life and I was standing in the town square in Bolivia, how would I see the sun? What would be my experience there? And would it be wrong? Or would it just be different? And if I turned the map upside down and put Africa and South America and Australia at the top of the map, I'd be confused, right? We'd be confused. But it wouldn't be wrong.
I recently went somewhere and they had a big wall map of the world. The other direction.
Other direction.
And I was like, I just looked at that. I was like, that's so cool. Because there is really no up or down.
No, there isn't. And this is again back to the center, the teaching of the center of this beautiful concept in the Northern Wisdom, to explore and understand, explore within yourself and understand that how you arrange your thought is in relationship to where you are in place. We cannot separate place, which is also presence, from our experience. Something else may be happening someplace else, but we have to speak about what's happening for us in the moment. And that's what happens, I think, for most of us when we get caught in all of this craziness of, like, I don't know what to do, and this is happening to me, and this is happening to me. We are served very well and very quickly by taking our staff, taking a step, doesn't matter which direction you step in, and step back into the center and say, I'm going to come back home. I'm going to come back to me, because I am the center at this moment. And I'm going to come back into my body, stop living in my mind. It's a dangerous neighborhood to go into, most of us, right? And ask, what's going on? And that's the place of power. And we need to be powerful. We need to be courageous. We need to have integrity. We need to have honor. And we need to feel powerful so that we can truly say, I am the sovereign of my own life. And as the sovereign, the ruler of my own life, I need to make decisions from that place. And it's not about power over, and it's not about taking anything from anyone else. Because we do these crazy things to each other when we forget to come home. And a lot of what goes on in the world comes from the place of people thinking in ways of manipulation, and or sometimes as they don't think at all. but when you come back into your body and you actually check in with yourself, there's a very different experience that you're going to have. So anybody have any questions up to this point? You can always interrupt me. No? And remember, you will have the recording, so you can listen to that. So I want to talk a little bit about horizon and the past and the future. And I did touch upon this in the ritual. So that's another, lot of my classes and things are available to listen to online and if you're interested, but this was talked about in the ritual I did a week ago Monday. When you stand in the present moment, in the presence of your own body, there's so much that you can observe and experience standing there with your staff, claiming your sovereignty, I am the center. And you look all around and you can see clouds in the sky, you can see the geography of the earth. There may be birds, plants, trees, and you can turn yourself around and look and all, just standing there. You're not moving, you're just there. So we only have a certain range of vision. And yet standing there, we know that there is all potentiality of something else coming into form. And that's the future. And all you need to do when you're in the center is to take one step in any direction, doesn't matter, and you will be able to see things that you couldn't see before you took the step. And what you've done is you've stepped into the future because you've stepped into that which you could not see. It was already there, already existed. It just was beyond your ability. You might have known about it. You might have smelled the smoke or smelled the, you know, the hay field, but you couldn't quite see it. So you take a step and you literally walk into that which is already there waiting to be revealed to you. And if you stay in the center and you don't move and you look only around you, you can also see the past. And the way that you see the past is as it exists in the present moment in the forms of things around you. Because the tree, for instance, we're going to do a lot of work with the tree. So there's a big tree. Now that tree is there existing in your present moment, but it also is existing there because of the past. And all you need to do is bore a hole into the tree or chop it down, and you can see the past in the presence of the tree by reading the growth rings. And you can actually read the past. Is that not true? You know, drought and fire and slow years and fast years, because the past exists in that being, the being of the tree, which allows it to be present. And then the tree also has this capability. Here are the leaves. The leaves fall down. Now the leaves are on the tree in the present moment. And as soon as they release, maybe they let go of the tree. Maybe the tree lets go of them. We don't know. Leaves fall down, and now the leaves become the past. They're no longer on the tree. And once they go into the ground and compost, they become the future, don't they? Because they're going to grow into that which is next. That's the same thing with your body. Your body standing in the present moment holds the potential of the future. And even if it's the future because you give birth to new life, that's one thing that we have as women, that we give birth to new life, but even putting that aside, we become the future because when we die, we go back into the earth, we go back to where the sun goes, and we come back again because our bodies are going to decompose. That's part of the system, that's part of the cycle. The body goes back into the earth, it decomposes, and it now will grow into the tree, so you will be present in the tree as the past, but you also become the future. This is the beauty of the circle. And it when you think in the line, a straight line, you know, with a destination, I'm going to heaven kind of thing, it can't encompass this. It can't create this beautiful circle that we live in that moves with us as we move, because you can never get to the horizon. You are always walking into your future. And as you walk into your future, that which you were standing in becomes the past. And then you are also in and of yourself the future and the past as you exist in the present moment. And that also is the power of coming back to the center, because you can live there and say, I am the future and I also am the past. And what I do now will change things for the future, but in truth it will also change the past. It's a very different way of being. Kind of have to, huh? We'll have to listen to this several times, right?
So how does it change the past? That's where you lost me.
Well, it changes the past because there is we're not thinking in a straight line.
Right.
And you will become the past, and whatever you do right now will either make the past be one way or the other way. And
the future past.
The future that,
okay.
The past that is coming.
Okay.
But when we think of it in a circle, it's seamless anyway. So I will share something very personal. My mother died in June, and she was in her 90s, and my little grandson knew her. And is very concerned. He's five, and he wanted to know what happened and where she is. And so we walk in the cemetery a lot. And I say, well, you know, Grandma Secret died, and you put people's bodies in the ground, and then the worms come and the bugs come, and that's part of nature. The body goes back into the earth, and then trees grow. So he's like, oh, that's why there's so many trees, because he loves the trees in the cemetery. And so he waited just a moment, and he said to me, Graham, when I die, I want to be an apple tree. And whatever he means by that, you know, I can speculate, but that was he got it. And so in truth, when he dies and becomes the apple tree, and his offspring eat the apple, they are actually eating their ancestor. Isn't that the beauty of the circle? Mm-hmm. That when we live long enough, we not only bring forth, but we also then feed. But we feed from a place in the future that affects the past. And that's the beauty of standing in the center. Because then when you stay present in the moment, you always know that no matter which way you turn, which way you go, you walk into the future. And with you, you carry the past. Because you are the past, but you also will become the past. Lots of double talk, right? Lots of double talk. So now, let me look at the time. So now I want to talk about the rune Eivaz. And the rune Eivaz, probably the best way for me to do that is just to draw it. If I have somebody hand me a pen, please. I'll just... Perfect. Good catch. Good throw. So the rune Eivaz is one of the runes that we call invertible. People say, oh, they are reversed. Things are reversed. No, reverse is doing this. Invertible is turning upside down. Oh. The difference, to reverse something isn't to turn something upside down. It's just a straight line with a diagonal line at the bottom going one way and a diagonal line at the top going the other way.
What is it called again?
Eivaz. E-I-H-W-A-Z.
I'm sorry,
it's
the A-I...
E-I-H... W-A-Z. Eivaz. So it's a pretty amazing rune in the sense that you also... Oh, here's my pen. It's made up of a single line that is the line called Issa. Issa is the rune for movement that exists within stillness. It's a rune... connected to ice. So ice looks like it's not moving, but it is. And there's a point right here in the center where if you look at this as being down and this as being up, or this as being above and this as being below, that there's a place right in the center of the Eivaz that is nothing. Because it's not the top, it's not the bottom. Not above, it's not below. And that's the axis on which it turns, right? And so this rune is always, it's a great rune to be with and explore because it helps you to understand this concept that the above is the same as the below and the below is the same as the above and the up and down and light and dark and good and bad, all these things that we want to do that exist within this shape. And just at the moment that it comes here, it's the moment of the nothing, which in essence is the moment of the present. Because in the moment of the present is the past and the future coming together in that instance, which immediately changes. Because already it's the past, isn't it? The moment's already past. So this is a rune, a really beautiful rune to work with. If you imagine that rune in this, imagine this as a flat plane, you know, like this, and stick that rune down through the center. So So it's got now the little diagonal and the diagonal. Mm-hmm. And it's not a top or a bottom. It doesn't matter. This is also a rune that's connected to the World Tree. And there are varying descriptions of the World Tree in Norse mythology and Northern traditions teachings. Some who say it is the ash, and there are others who say it is the yew tree. And there are some who say it is called Yggdrasil, and some who say that it is called Laereth, L-A-E-R-E-T-H. Now, this is not a class to be teaching you rune lore, but it's important to understand a little bit about this concept of the Eivaz rune and the tree, because it relates to how we're going to orient ourselves in the teachings of the directions of the wheel. The reason that I would hesitate to refer to it as Yggdrasil is because Yggdrasil means the, loosely translated in its connection, is that it's Odin's horse, Odin's steed. It was supposedly the tree that Odin hung on to do his ordeal, so that he grabbed a few runes out of the great cosmic soup of runes because he felt entitled to grab them. That's another way to look at it. Of course, that tree had, even if it was the tree that he hung on, it had a name before he ever came into existence, and to call it Odin's tree limits it to Odin, which then limits us to a very new, recent explanation of a lot of the things from Norse mythology, which takes us out of the old, old wisdom of the primal times, when all of this came out of the great void of darkness that was female. And now we're back into a hanged god that gave us runes, and it smells like Christianity to me. So I just invite you to, that's also in my book, which I speak about. It's time for us to take the runes back from Odin. They don't belong to him. He took them. He took some of them. So that's why I hesitate to refer to the tree as Yggdrasil, because it limits us with that. It's an imagery that would go much farther back, and when you read the old sagas, there the Norns were dwelling in the roots of the tree, and the Norns were those who were working with the runes, and the tree existed in the great void, and out of the void came the realm of fire and ice, Muspelheim and Niflheim, that collided together in this great chaos out of which creation occurred, but the creation story isn't a singular event. It's over and over again. So if these worlds, Niflheim and Muspelheim, existed in the void and collided together in the chaos to create, and the story says that the worlds exist in the tree, then that says the tree had to have been there before the worlds, and long before the creation story, and way longer than the appearance of Odin. So we're talking about something that is an imagery describing the existence of something that's been there much from the beginning, which is also the end, because there's no start point and end point. This is this beautiful circle. So here's this beautiful tree. And it's a great way for us as humans on the earth to understand the center of the wheel, and for us to understand our experience with it. A tree cannot exist without its root system. And the tree, what is below the surface that you cannot see, is just as extensive as what is above that you can see. And if you were going to get rid of part of the tree, you could more safely get rid of the top part of the tree, because the roots will grow it again. But the top of the tree doesn't last without the roots. So when we are obsessed with light and above and focus on the branches, without the root, we're dead. We have a mind-based spiritual concept that cannot be sustained because it's outside of the body. And those kinds of spiritual concepts are the things that allow us actually to live in a world where we destroy the earth. Because when we live in our minds and we don't live in our bodies anymore, we are doing things to destroy the earth, which ultimately will destroy us. So we want to come back to a spiritual practice that puts us back in our bodies and brings us back into our root system. And that's the beauty of putting the tree in the center. And it doesn't really matter whether it's the ash or the yew, but I'll tell you why I believe it's more likely or more appropriately connected to the yew tree. But if you stand in the center of your life with your staff, don't imagine sending down a root, because that isn't what's there. Remember, you have roots. That's a very different place. Don't send a root down. You're not existing if you don't have roots already. So stand there, feel yourself, and remember that you have roots. That there is, because the root is the part that's hidden. The root is the part that's in the dark. The root is, it's what feeds you, it waters you, it gives you the nutrients, and they are not above the surface. So all of this concept of what is it that's down, because that is the past that becomes the future. Because it's out of the root system that something new grows. So remember, when you stand in the center, that you already have a root system. You've just forgotten about it. The yew tree is a very amazing, magical tree. Some of the biggest yew forests and oldest yew trees are in the British Isles. They're trees that live for thousands of years, and they can't really determine their age by looking at rings, because they don't grow that way. So they look at how big an area the yew tree encompasses, because the yew grows branches up that go back down and grow back into the ground, mm-hmm. and it rots out in the middle. It can be looking like it's dead for up to 300 years. A yew tree looks like it's dead, and then all of a sudden up out of the middle of the yew tree will grow a new tree. So it's a tree that just keeps regenerating itself. So that's another place that you can stand in the center and use the tree and say, you know, maybe am I in a time when I'm not growing? Does it appear like I've rotted away, but I'm still alive? Mm-hmm. Because we get really frustrated, don't we, when mm-hmm. something's not happening. It's like you think, there always has to be something happening, but that's not true. The tree can teach you. In the center, this beautiful room, this Ayavaz room, teach you how to be okay with whatever's going on. So, so now what I will talk a little bit about is the imagery of the world tree as it exists in the Edas, the writings that we have. There's very few writings that we have that come from the north. And sadly, everything that we have that's written down was written down by someone who was other. We have no writings that come from people who actually believed in these gods, believed in these stories, lived them, practiced them. All of what we have was translated, gathered together and translated by a Catholic monk. So it's flavored that way, it's skewed that way, and it still has value for us, but you've got to remember what you're reading. You know, I use that example in class quite often. It's like only reading about pregnancy and childbirth out of books that were written by men. Right. And that's the sad case that exists for most of us as women, that most of what's written is written, you know, comes, you know, our stories come out of the mouths of men. So to, you know, and even with a woman might write about childbirth, pregnancy and childbirth, even if she hasn't had a baby, and she can write from her inner knowing of having that capability. But to truly write about the experience of giving birth, being pregnant and giving birth, you have to have done it. Mm-hmm. And so what we have for writings, the prose Ada and the poetic Adas, are collections of writings that came from oral traditions that were translated and put together through the eyes of Catholicism. It's true of it, almost everything. We have really nothing written about, for instance, the Celtic and the Germanic tribes that also were not written through the lens of the Roman conquerors. And we were always presented as other, as barbarian. Always written about. All of our practices, all of our beliefs, our gods, our spirituality was always written about as something that was barbaric or savage or uncivilized or undomesticated. And even if we use those words, even the words heathen and pagan, are really not appropriate for us to speak about ourselves. They don't sound good because they were the way we were described by the conquerors. You know, how would we call it? We would call ourselves the people or the kindred, or because we wouldn't have called ourselves heathen and pagan. That's always in relationship to the one true religion or the one true conquering power. We're not uncivilized. We were not undomesticated. We were not savage. If you want to talk about savage, maybe talk about the church. Right?
Yeah.
Why is it that this young woman has to study Oriental medicine? It's because we were in our oral culture, and during the time of the Inquisition, systematically, hundreds of thousands of people were killed who held the teachings, the deep old health wisdom about how to use herbs, how to heal the body, how to take care of ourselves from our own culture, from our own environment and climate, because it was not written down, because we were the holders of the wisdom. And if you imagine that that was a systematic destruction of every single library, if you had gone into the Orient and destroyed all of their libraries of writings and drawings with their acupuncture points, they would be at just the same place that we are. We have to study this stuff from other cultures because they killed us. And yet it's still there. It's still there, but it's in our DNA. It's in our, we remember. And on a bigger level, as you start to work with this, our ancestors right now are coming forward. They're literally raising up out of the grave, out of the mounds, and picking us and asking us, will you remember? Will you come forward and remember who I am and what I knew? Because you carry it in the bloodline. You have the ability to teach, or you have the ability to speak, or you're good in laying. You know, we don't need to do Reiki. In the Germanic tradition, you can just look there, it was called bettering. The laying on of the hands or the moving of energy was called bettering. That's in Max Dashu's book on witches and pagans, where she talks about that. So why wouldn't we use our own symbols? Why wouldn't we pay attention and do the laying on of the hands and use rune symbols?
Right. So much easier to remember.
Exactly. And they have just as much power. And again, it's like, well, this is transmitted through this guy who, you know, again, we're back to the Orient and blah, 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 and you study for a weekend and you're a master. Right. No. So why wouldn't we? In fact, right now I'm off on a rant, but Christy is at Invoke is working on creating a screen printing system because she is screen printing rune flags. Mm-hmm. And I have asked her for, you know, the last 5 years, it's like, why are you, you know, why are we flying Tibetan prayer flags? We don't even know what's written on them. We, you know, why wouldn't we fly flags that carry our own symbols, carry our own gods, carry our own prayers? You know, that's a, do some, so she's printing rune flags. Because she's tired of listening to me. But that's also part of what I sense is when you step back into the center and you remember who you are and you connect with your ancestors and you feel the roots, you have a history. You have a root system that runs deep. And you have a historical memory from the past that exists in your body just as much as the tree holds the past in its growth rings. How you look, the illnesses you have, the, you know, the color of your hair, that comes from your ancestors. And the fact that you can do something, you know, have a natural ability, and sometimes it's many generations down, it's like, well, where did that come from? Oh, well, great grandma Hepzibah, you know, who lived over the mountain, could do that. And here it is in the great 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 grandchild showing up. And that's also what this work is about, is to, it's time for us to remember who we are and to come home. Not because we're better than, not because we're trying to take over or anything. It's like how, we've been wandering around for so long without a history. And we can't, we haven't lived in this country long enough to claim, even if you were born here, you can't claim to be indigenous. They don't want you to, right? I am an indigenous American, you know, of the, because that just means of the land, that's all. But we really can't claim that. Can you claim that you're indigenous to Europe? No. But, you know, like, my grandfather was an immigrant. My kid's father was an immigrant. And most of us don't have to go back very far to our lineage. So this is the kind of work that will help you reconnect. Truthfully, working with the runes. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about this story of the tree. And in the sagas, in the Eddas, we have a dragon, so it's referred to as a dragon. There's a dragon that lives underground in the roots of the world tree. And the dragon is called Nidhogg, Nidhogg, and it's a she. And she has lots of little offspring. I like to think of them as the earthworms. Nidhogg. Now, you can look, scry the internet, look up Nidhogg, and you're going to get this horrible, oh my goodness, this dragon in the root of the tree is eating away at the roots, because that's what she gnaws at the roots, and she's destroying the tree. And it's always negative, because why? Because it's a dragon or a serpent. It's down in the dark. It's at the bottom. And it's doing something evil. But she is the corpse eater. That's her name. She's not the being who deals with death, like Hela. Hela deals with the experience of death. Nidhogg deals with the body. She eats the roots, and she also crawls across one of the roots, and she eats the corpses on Dead Man's Shore. That's how it's described in the, translated in the Edda. But she's a composter. She doesn't hurt the tree. She's down there gnawing away and doing her work, because that's how the tree thrives. Is everything grows from death. Everything grows from this great composting. So that's what's down there with you in your root, is this beautiful being who takes care to make sure of all that she takes care of the past and reworks it so that you can assimilate it, so that it can become your present and then become the future, which will fall off the tree in the form of the leaf and will become the past again. So whenever you read something that presents these things negatively, just flip it over and say, If I was telling the story, not good old Snorri Sturluson from the Catholic Church, this serpent wouldn't be evil or bad. It would be doing, she's doing her job. We have also in the top of the tree this description of an eagle and a hawk. An eagle with a hawk between its eyes. I don't know, you know, like what does that mean? But there's lots of creatures in the world tree that we would have to take a whole class just to talk about all the creatures. But these, we got down below the dragon, Nidhogg, we've got up above these birds that have the ability to see far. And we would want that. We would want that ability. Our ancestors looked into the heavens. The sky moved around them. They watched the stars disappear behind the horizon. They watched some of them circle, always circle. So it's a beautiful imagery to have two birds up at the top that are far-seeing. And also what's interesting is that they are birds that are birds of prey. So they're not benign. So they're also up there, but they are feeding by killing. You know, we don't have a place for that in our culture either. It's like, oh no. I saw this sign on the bus today that went by. My hair goes like on fire standing. Have a compassionate Thanksgiving. Have a vegan Thanksgiving. And I thought, okay, but you know what's what would be more compassionate is like, what's the root of Thanksgiving? Right?
Not such good stuff.
Not good stuff. But we get all hooked in. We'll get hooked in. Nobody would want to put that. Have a compassionate Thanksgiving. Don't celebrate it. Kill a soybean instead and make a turkey out of it. You know, like have a tofurkey Thanksgiving. But we get hooked by the vegan thing because that's the sentimentality of, and if you're vegan, that's fine. I'm, you know, but it's just, it's that place like where we're so led and manipulated. Like, I went off on another tangent. You'll hear me every week go off on tangents. So back to the flying eagle. They're birds of prey. They exist by killing things. That's life, because life comes from death. The tree grows out of death. The tree grows out of the work that the serpent does down below. And so perhaps when you are in your tree self and you're standing in the center and you're holding your staff and you're feeling your root system, you can look for ways to have the balance of that which is above and that which is below. And I think it's a perfect, beautiful play for us, because if we tend to think that of the white light and the high consciousness and all of that that gets proposed up at the top, though, that's not what's up there. It's a bird of prey. So that's also the bringing the balance, which spins the Avos rune. Bring the death up out of the bottom and put it back up at the top, because that also is how things exist. And then we have this beautiful creature called Ratatoskr, who's a squirrel. And the squirrel also lives in the world tree. And the squirrel's job is to run up and down the trunk. And it's presented as causing mischief and telling lies between the eagle and the hawk at the top and the dragon at the in the root. Can you just see this squirrel? And remember, squirrels like can't find half of what they bury. They bury 100 nuts, and they yes, it's interesting. There's a great study done. Is they're always busy, but they don't remember where they bury things. So you can't trust the squirrel. But again, this is perfect imagery of how to connect the above and the above and the below, how to connect put together these aspects of the present moment, because the tree is existing in the present moment, but it can't exist without the past, And it can't exist without being the future. And it holds all of it in the present moment, and it's active because there is an active communication going on between what's above and what's below, and up and down this trunk in the form of this crazy little squirrel. It's just perfect, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So when you step into the center, anything that's going on, you know, how do you use this in day-to-day life? And I really, instead of take a breath and count to 10, it's fine. Take a breath and step into the center and count to 10, you know, and say, I am the sovereign of my life. I have courage. I have honor. I have integrity. I have roots. I have branches. I have as much going on in the dark as I do in the light. There is death and decay all around me. That's what makes me alive. And so you have something like that that brings you back into the center of this concept of the wheel. And then when you feel that, again, you maybe have just one word, like I don't know if it's appropriate to say a trigger word, that you can say one word, center. And just go there and have all of that. Remember it. And then when you stand in that place, you have a voice. You have a presence. How different would it be if each of us, even as women with all the stuff that's going on, you know, now. It's like to stand in the presence of somebody and say, do you have any idea who I am? Do you have any idea who I am? Do you know that you lived inside my body? Every single person on the earth lived inside the body of a woman. Is that not true? Mm-hmm. Is that not humbling? And that when you came out with a lot of blood and guts. Do you have any idea who I am? I don't have to be pushing on you, right? There's something happens to you to stand in the center of your life and claim your sovereignty, feel yourself rooted in the ground, in your ancestry, in your heritage, in the power that you hold as an individual, and step forward from that place. Hold other people accountable for their language, for their actions. Hold yourself accountable. And every time you get off, step back there. You know, it's like, oh, is this my soulmate? It's like, what kind of a stupid question is that? I mean, it really is, because it has nothing to do with anything. Because you, if you're asking the question, the answer is no, it isn't, obviously. Why are you looking for a soulmate? You don't even know who you are. Because you wouldn't ask that question if you were standing in the center of your life, because there would be no doubt about whether or not this was somebody that you wanted to stand next to, mm-hmm, and live with and move forward with. Take them into battle. Could I take you into battle with me? Nope. Next. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about some of this stuff. It's like, is this my right? What's my best career choice? Well, first of all, if you're using the word career, because that comes from Latin, to run around the racetrack.
Oh, my God. It's very appropriate then.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you ask me, is this my vocation? Vocation is vocare, to hear the call. I would say, don't ask me, be quiet and listen, because if it is your vocation, you will hear the call. But you can't hear it unless you're willing to stand in the center and actually experience the present moment with all of your senses, and not thinking, not just this thinking thing, but this place of, how does it feel? What does it taste like? What does it smell like? What am I seeing? What am I knowing? With all of my experience, the below stuff and the above stuff, because we ask questions. We get confused in this world because it's a world that comes from the mind, and we ask questions from the mind, not from the dragon in the root, right? Put him down there and see if she eats him. Or she gets indigestion or something. I'm just using some of these examples of like what, and that's not to discount or trivialize the things we face. But most of the time, the stuff that we're facing or that we think we awfulize and panic about really has nothing to do with something that's much older and much deeper rooted and much more important for what's going on right now. That to me is also these teachings. It's like what are we really looking at? What is the bigger question? What's the bigger issue? And the center can help you to do that. Anybody have any questions or observations? you can argue with me.
I always love the I don't know the image of Ratatosk, but the fact that she brings confusion sometimes, mm-hmm, between the up and the down kind of intrigues me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And have you ever experienced that in your personal life, where there is, when there is attempting to communicate, that there is confusion?
Oh, all the time.
All the time. Right, right, yeah. And if we allow it to be playful, you know, if we allow it to just feel the experience, it's like, well, I don't know what's really going on, because, you know, he's listening down here, and then he runs up, or she or it, and tells something else up here, and then listens up here and then runs down, because isn't that what happens to us a lot of times? Mm-hmm. It's like, what am I feeling? And then up here it's like, oh no, that would never work. You know, we try to talk ourselves out of, mm-hmm, things, right?
Right.
Rather than paying attention. We are the squirrel. We are our, mm-hmm, own squirrel. We are the tree. Not the we are one. We are the squirrel. So I'm going to show you another rune that is tied to the center. This is my high-tech visual, right? So it's a rune called Dagaz. Dagaz. Looks like a little bow tie. Da 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 da, Dagaz. Mm-hmm. It's another interesting rune, because not only can it be reversed, bloop, like that, flip, but it also can be inverted. Some of the runes can, some of them can't. And energetically, when you're working with a rune, it's not about this is negative, this is positive. This is just to look at the energy, because you could flip it over and it'll be the same, side to side, and also upside down. So it's the same. That's not, and that's true of the Eivas, but to remember that one is inverted and one is reversed. So Dagaz. Now Dagaz also is a wonderful rune to use when you're working with the center, because it's a rune that also has a still point. And in the rune poem that I wrote, I say arms crossed, you know, because you can imagine crossing your arms like this to form this Dagaz, that the still point is constantly moving, because we can't be, balance is never static. We can only maintain balance by being in motion. And so what happens in this Dagaz rune is that whenever you come to this middle part, it's the part of the nothing. It's the part where it's not one side and it's not the other. It's the part that's in the middle, which is the present moment. We're not the past, we're not the future, but we are. We exist in that still point in the present moment. Now, very often, you will read things about Dagas. Does everybody have the image? I can lay my papers down. You'll read about Dagas, and it's the people call it the rune of day or daybreak. To which I say BS, because it's two-sided, right? And we don't ever have daybreak without nightfall, do we? Right. Why wouldn't we call it the rune of nightfall?
Because we have the Christian background with everything being light and...
Say the word dark. No, nobody wants to say the word dark. So it isn't a rune of daybreak. It's actually a rune that I would say more appropriately could be called a rune of a transformation, or a rune of constantly moving. Because if we only experience light, then we're missing half of it. We only experience the branches, we're missing half of the tree. You know, just keep this in the vision of the center, that you can't be in the center and have only one aspect existing there. So Dagas could also be turned like this and inserted through the middle and have that little center point. And so then it becomes similar to the infinity sign, only done with straight lines. So you've got, it's constantly doing this. This is high noon and this is darkest of the night. You could also say it's summer solstice and winter solstice with the equinoxes in the middle. That's one place in our language that the night is there. Mm-hmm. Equinox means right. Equal night, mm-hmm. Not equal day. So this rune then is to show that these two things exist completely separate from each other. When they come together, they become the nothing. Because it isn't night and it isn't day. And then that takes you into this whole concept of understanding of that moment. Is the sun above the horizon or below the horizon? When you watch this experience, daybreak or nightfall, dusk or dawn, there's that moment, which is there. When it's there, and then it isn't. When it isn't there, and then it is. And if you blink your eye, you miss it. True? And so standing in the center and experiencing the above and the below, and knowing that this, like the roots are always drawing the nourishment from the bottom, they pull, the roots pull. And they're being activated by what's happening up in the top, which is activated by the sunlight. So the sunlight acts and causes that pulling. But then the roots are also pulling the nourishment down, because that's always happening in the tree, up and down, up and down. There's the squirrel again. And they don't exist side by side. You know, they are separate. The roots are separate from the branches. And yet they exist as a whole in the tree. And to say that it's one or the other, one is better than the other, or we don't need the other, is to create the imbalance again. So when you come back to center, you always come back to balance. Always come back to above and below, light and dark, up and down, low vibration, high vibration. So if you want to balance to high vibration, one of the ways that you can do that is through drumming. Drumming is a way to, especially on the bigger drums, you feel your mother's heartbeat. You can hear the resonance of the earth. When you drum, there's that sound that is deep. You feel it in your body very differently. When you play the singing bowls, for instance, it's a very different, beautiful sound, but it's not the same effect on the physical body as you have when you listen to a deep resonant drum beat. Which reminds me, I do a drum circle on Thursday. It's this Thursday, once a month, at Christie's house, if you ever want to come to listen to the drum beat. White people played drums. You know that? We did. We had our own drums before we even came here. We even, believe it or not, we had horses. Oh, by the way, we brought them here. Can you imagine imagery of Native Americans without a horse?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's so weird to think, like, but that's our image because they didn't have
them. They didn't have them. Yeah. We brought
really?
Them.
Spaniards. The Spaniards brought them.
Yeah, horses were not here. It's pretty fascinating. And the image that we have of the Native American, most everybody is always around the, like, Lakota, for instance, which is just a small portion of more than 500 different tribes, and most of them didn't use horses.
They also didn't have beads.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've even our imagery of and our fascination with some of the stuff that goes on doesn't even have its basis.
History was written by the victor.
Exactly. Exactly. And how we see them too, and that's also then goes back to how we are seen. Because there were victor, you know, our Christianity was not a choice for most of the Northern Europeans,
and many people in the world.
Yes, peace, love, and light. Right. No, it wasn't a choice. So then again, that's why I say when we read even some of the sagas, they were written by the conqueror, not by the people themselves. So always read those if you choose to go in and start to read the northern stories. Always, always take them apart and say, how would this story be told if the woman was telling it? That's a good place to start. What would she have to say? Oh, by the way, she doesn't even have a name. But, you know, so she doesn't have a voice. So Dagas, this is Rune. If you want to know a little bit about how this rune shows up, is usually with regard to something going on in your life that has to do with transformation. And I will describe it very often in the language of metamorphosis, the language of the butterfly and the caterpillar. And so it's another rune that's really beautiful to take with you into the center. And to ask yourself also, am I in a cycle of changing form? Because a caterpillar has one function.
Eat.
It eats.
Eat and poop.
Sounds like a newborn, right? And cries. And then at a moment that it knows, but maybe we don't, it stops eating. And from its own body, it creates its own container. And then within that container of stillness, it literally transforms. Nothing gets added in and nothing gets taken away. It actually comes to the still point because it's no longer a caterpillar and it's not a butterfly yet. It's just this thing in the middle.
It's liquid.
Yeah. This is a fascinating concept, isn't it?
It liquefies its organs and formulates.
And so it transforms, and when it's ready to get out, it wiggles. You know, there's movement, and then all of a sudden, there it is, there you are, and your friend looks at you and says, "Oh, Leah, you can't fly. You've never done that before. Just come back over here and eat some leaves." Have we ever been in a place like that where we've gone through this major thing and we're ready to flap the wings and our friends are telling us that that's not... You've never flown before.
They don't have the mouth parts to eat anymore. All they can do is sip nectar.
Sip nectar and fly. And why did you get all prettied up like that? You looked just fine when you were green. Yeah.
I got pretty to mate.
Yeah. So see, but this happens in our lives when we change and the people around us don't recognize that we've been through some type of experience like that and that now we have the ability to do something else and there's purpose in the form change. There's purpose in the work we did in the stillness, which would bring you back to the center which would bring you back to the singular line of the Ayavas, which is the Issa, which is there is movement that happens within the stillness of the Issa. Even if it looks like nothing's happening, there is still movement. So again, the center could be not just in the moment of coming and how do I make a decision, how do I deal with this situation, you know, how do I make a, you know, what choice do I need to make. You can also use it over, standing in the center over a longer period of time as you are going through a transformation period, for instance, and call the Dagas rune into the center. And then the last piece that I want to talk about is the are the winds. And if you imagine indigenous people who don't have the maps and don't have the names that, like we do, everything is like an arbitrary name. They're living in an uncertain climate. They're living in a certain geographical area, even from village to village, over one hill or on the other side of the fjord or whatever. You would stand in the center and you would ask yourself, from which direction is the wind blowing? We still do that in English, right? Which way is the wind blowing? What does that mean in English? Which
way? Easiest way to go.
Yeah, which way is the wind blowing? Yeah. So you would ask yourself, which way is the wind blowing? And the question is, what direction is it coming from? That's what that, when the wind is blowing, you know, this is a north wind. The wind isn't blowing north, it's coming to you from the north. The north wind is blowing this way. So what you would then know by the wind is where it was coming from, not necessarily directional, but what was it bringing. So the wind that blows in from the gorge, let's say we can orient ourselves here, the wind that blows in from the gorge, it's very specific, you know it. The wind that comes in from the east, it has a different feel to it, it brings a different kind of weather. And it's very recognizable compared to, say, a wind that's blowing up from the south or a wind blowing in from the ocean. And we maybe don't notice the differences. We just say the wind is blowing. It's hard for us also because of the buildings and all the interference. But the subtlety of the wind when you are more in nature gave the people huge amounts of information. And wind is the movement of air. And we think in terms of, like, you know, this is just space and we're sitting in an empty room, but we're not. We're not any different than a fish swimming in water. We don't say the fish is swimming in nothing. It's just suspended there. We're actually in air. And when air moves, it creates weather. The weather changes. So the slightest change in the direction of the air, heat from the day coming up from the valley, causes clouds, brings rain, the smells are different, the temperature is different. Also, as you locate yourself, orient yourself in the wheel, that you would stand there and ask yourself, which way is the wind blowing? And that could be very literal. And it also can be very symbolic in the sense that you're paying enough attention to feel. Sometimes that would be what's being said. Because when we speak by movement of air. Our words come out of our body with our breath. So when we speak, we also change the weather, don't we? And so asking which way the wind is blowing would also be a way for you to pay attention to the subtle changes of the weather that exists around you and the weather that perhaps is being created by those around you who are speaking. And we do speak things into existence. We have two runes that teach that. The rune Ansuz is the rune about speaking, as well as Os, which is more about in and out breath. But we have to take a breath in order to have a breath go out. And that's the way we speak. So asking that question.
What were the two runes called?
One is called Ansuz. Looks like an F, but the arms are pointing down diagonal. Mm-hmm. Ansuz.
And that one was the one that...
It's like speaking things into... Okay. You know, that's a simplistic... I'm just giving you runes that have that certain kinds of energies and connections to what we're talking about. The other one is a rune called Os. Looks like Ansuz, but then it's got chevron shape, like that. Os. And this can also... This is a rune about... in and out, so it's also about estuary, like the tides, movement of water, movement of air, but that movement gives us information. Mm-hmm. And speaking is what inspires you. We have to inspire in order to, you know, we have to inhale in order to exhale. Inspire, expire. Mm-hmm. That's also a teaching in the runes about the fact that you start life on earth in human form with an inhale and you end on an exhale. Right. Somebody said, well, what if you drown? I said, well, you still have to exhale, and then the next inhale isn't air, it's water. Mm-hmm. So you did die on the exhale. So let me go through my notes and take a peek. Well, that would be another rune then that I would say that we could put into the center. The runes, we'll find that they move in. We can take all the runes and take them in all the directions, including the center, as you would learn the runes and say, what does this rune have to teach me? What does it have to say to me if I'm standing and facing the sunrise, if I'm standing and facing the sunset? This would be another way that you can develop the practice as you would learn the runes, is to take each one of them with you into each of the parts of the wheel. So Suwilo, for instance, which looks like, well, it was used by Hitler, it's the SS, symbol of the SS. Suwilo is the symbol of the sun. The sun in the Norse tradition is a female. Her name is Suna. She's about warmth and growth and new life. We don't have a male sun god. People from the desert do, but we don't. We have a female. Japanese Amaterasu is a sun goddess. Old Japanese. So Suwilo would be a rune that we could take into the center, because she is the sun, and she then, we could ask her, so you're standing there and you need to find your way, and you could call in the energy of Suwilo and say, show me which way I need to turn to face where you are rising or to face where you are setting. And then forming a relationship with that rune, because it may not be literally that you are facing the setting of the sun or the rising of the sun. It may have to do with you using the teachings from as we go through the directions, like what is coming into sight, what is coming into form, what is beginning, what is ending. And so turning in the directions could be with regard to something that isn't literally, is the, you know, when are you coming up, when are you setting. It could be about something happening in your life. And what we want to remember, and I'm not going to start next week with the East, I'm going to start next week with the West, because this is the time of year that we are going into the dark. And for the Celtic people, for instance, their day began when the sun set, not when the sun rose, which is a completely different way to experience living, is to imagine that we right now have just started our new day because the sun went down at 5 o'clock, and that was the beginning, not the ending. And so this is also the time of year. We've just passed that cross quarter on the wheel, and we're going into the dark. And that they calculated or measured their year by, we're going into the dark or we're going into the light. We're going into the dark or we're going into the light. It's the way it was. You're either being born or you're dying. You're being born or you're dying. It's either growing or it's decaying. It's either moving up or it's moving down. And then there's no difference. So when I went in 2015, I can't remember, 2015, up to the Sami people north of the Arctic Circle, and the reindeer herder people, and so I was there at summer solstice, and it doesn't get dark. It, you know, it's 24 hours of light. Have any of you ever been up above the Arctic Circle?
Not yet.
Yes. make it a point to do that. It's a really amazing experience to be at like 2 o'clock in the morning walking around, and it's like 7 o'clock in the morning here, but there's no shadows. It's really fascinating because the sun is there in the middle of the night, but because it's not up in the sky, there, it doesn't create a shadow. It has, you have the light, and then during the day it rises up into the sky, but it never gets dark. And so for them, they wouldn't measure their time by the rising of the sun and the setting of the sun, because in the winter it stays dark.
Right.
You know, and the farther north you go, it's literally, there can be about 3 months of darkness. Now, I talked to Lila about what do the people, and I talked to a nurse in the hospital who, about the same thing. It's like, well, how do you deal with that? How do you live with that? So both of them said, the people who are born there and who live there, she said, we don't follow a clock. We can't follow a clock because it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't make sense to anything that's happening. And that we'll be really, really busy and really active during the periods of the daylight, and accomplish lots of things and kind of nap when we feel tired, rather than going to bed, trying to go to bed and sleeping for, you know, our 8 hours of sleep, to rest when you're tired. And it doesn't matter if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're up and you're doing things. They'll get up and do things because I took a nap and I don't need to sleep anymore. And that in winter time, then it's harder because it's like all you want to do is sleep. And if you think about how people lived that way, they lived in relationship to where, how they were oriented, not with the timing of the clock. Right. The space-time connection for them has to do with literally what's happening in the sky, what's happening on the earth, not living by a clock.
Or an electric light.
Yes. It's very different. It's really unusual. And they do, well, I also, this summer in May, I went to the Netherlands and I spent a month with a woman who studies the runes with me. She and her husband are blind. And one of the challenges that I had never thought about, and that she expressed, is that they take melatonin because since they can't see, which is one of the ways that the body regulates about day and night, is that it doesn't get the same kind of information to balance the the melatonin in their body, so that they have found, not they personally, but it has been discovered that it's very helpful for people who are blind to, she has no eyes, actually. So nothing, you know, it's not like, oh, I can't see. There's nothing that goes in. So they take melatonin. So, you know, then that goes back to something I teach in the rune class. So you've never taken the rune class, but you have, about Suilo and Suna and St. John's wort. Anybody ever heard of St. John's wort? Mm-hmm. Okay. What does it look like?
Yellow flowers.
When does it bloom?
In the fall?
In the summer?
Summer solstice?
When it, at least in the northern climate. Mm-hmm. What do you think it was called before St. John was born?
Sunflower.
It was called Sunawort. Mm-hmm. It was named actually after the sun goddess. It's called mm-hmm. Sunawort. It still is. So why, here again, Christianity comes in and calls it, what does John have to do with this little yellow flower? What's it good for?
Depression. If you take the leaf up to the sun shines through the little holes in the leaf. So mm-hmm. I've heard it said that it lets the light in.
It lets the light in.
Yeah.
What's one of the things you're not supposed to do if you're taking St. John's wort?
Probably be in the sun.
Yeah. It makes you photosensitive, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Now, isn't that interesting that a plant that grows in the north, that blooms in the summer, that can be used as an herb, would be used by people in the north when there isn't a lot of sunlight? You would want your skin to be photosensitive so that you could absorb as much sunlight as you possibly could. Don't you think they understood that and used it in their herbal wisdom? But they didn't call it St. John. It's like we've also had our whole culture, our whole way of knowing removed because things were renamed.
I think June 24th is St. John's Day in the Saints calendar.
Mm-hmm. So they because it was usually part of the blooming at the winter at the summer solstice, which mm-hmm. is around the 21st of June.
Right.
Which is not any different than calling it Christ's Day, right?
Right.
Yeah. So this is also a piece. So here's this beautiful rune, Suilo. You could take Suilo into the center and ask, show me where you're going to be rising and where you're going to be setting. Show me how to connect with you. So we're going to end on one little note. I did a lot of scrying on the internet looking up the word orient because, you know, like, well, how do you say orient in German or how do you say orient in Swedish, and it's all orient. But if you keep going and you keep going, I found out that an old expression in German, archaic, they call it Morgenland. They call it the land of the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that beautiful to take it out of the Latin? Latin, of course, it means rising. That's fine. But how much of our language, you know, what do we lose when we only look at the Latin words? Can we go back and find our way to some of the old Germanic, old Norse words and say, when you stand in the center, turn and face the morning land? Can you feel that?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know what it's like in the morning. Yes, I'm going to turn and face the Morgenland. It's really neat. So we will start next week in the west, with the setting of the sun, with the going into the dark, with the light disappearing, and with death, and with ancestors, and with memory, because the past is where we have to go, because that's the past, right? When you're going into it, that's where you're going. You're going there from you're walking into the future, but you're walking into the past, and it's from there that we can find out where we're going by going into our ancestral memory because they know what we need to know. And they're feeding us right now. Are you the apple tree? Are you eating the apples from the tree in the cemetery that used to be your grandma?
Mm-hmm.
Is she feeding you? That's another way to look at it, right? That's also tied with the rune Otila, the rune of ancestral home, that when you come connected to your ancestors, you begin, they feed you, literally and figuratively. So look for a staff, draw your circle with your rune. We didn't even talk about the Gar rune, but that's not so important right now. It's just the center. So this week, I would like you to come back next week with perhaps one experience that you have during the week where you can perhaps share and say, I remembered something from the class. I took a step back into the center. And this is how I acted or how I moved or how it affected me. That would be a way to bring the teaching into your daily life. Do it, if you can do it more than once, that's wonderful.
I want to take a photo of the circle.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a good idea.
I used a saucer. And that's why I use the graph paper, because it's easier to make it balanced by just counting out the...
Actually, I think my phone might...
How about I'll take a picture of it and send it to you?
That would be great. My phone might...